chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Marcel Combs on the show today. Marcel is an entrepreneur, business owner, speaker, author, and the host of the 50% podcast with Marcel Combs. Well, Marcel, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I'm so grateful that you are making the time to be on the show today. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm so excited to just get to sit and visit with you for a while.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, when you and I first met, I'm like, oh, I could spend a lot more time with this woman. So as you know, because you're a podcast host too, what all good podcast hosts do is say, come on to the show and then we can spend even more time with each other. But I want to give a shout out. I always love to do this. I think it's good for our listeners to understand how connections are made. And you really never know, Marcel, right, where a connection is going to necessarily come from. But I have to give a shout out to our mutual friend, Will Herring.
Absolutely. He's a great guy. And he said immediately, you must meet Lisa.
That's what he said to me about you. So here we are. So thank you, Will. We appreciate the connection and for you thinking of us. But Marcel, oh my goodness, you're a mom of five. You got Jeremy, Josh, Jacob, Jonathan, and Ivy. And I remember the first time I talked to you, you said Ivy just fell out of heaven and you guys got her. And we might talk about her a little bit. You're also Gammy to six grands, right?
Yes.
You're the wife of Craig. You are a multi-time business owner, one very large healthcare business that you sold about 5 years ago. You founded, I don't know how many, maybe three or four or five companies. You host the 50% with Marcel Combs podcast. You're a speaker, a community leader. Wow. I'm tired. Just reading all that. I have to know, what is your secret? Where does your energy come from, Marcel?
Do you know, that is the really big question. It makes me tired to think about it too. I always say I kind of bore easily. So I have to fight that just a tad to say, what new thing can I do so I'm not completely bored in the process? And for me, I always wanted a big family. I thought that would be great fun. And I will tell you, it's been a blast. The most fun thing I've done in my whole life.
Is your big family. Yeah. Right. And you've got five kids, so you may have more than, you know, six grands before it's all over.
I don't know if they're quite as crazy. You know, my second son, really only two of my children have children. My first and second son, and the second son went first and had four kids. So, you know, thank goodness for him, because the rest are all on kind of delay, and I don't know if we're going to get there or not. But I'll be happy with, that's the best job ever, to be a grandmother. I can't tell you. It's so.
Could not agree more. You know, Greg always says, Marcel, he always says, you know, I thought Jordan, Paige, and Allie, I thought I loved them with all my heart. But when Sawyer came along, he showed me the other 75%.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. My husband used to stand in front of my first grandchild, and he's named Pops. And so he would sit in front of them at 6 months old and go, pop, pop, pop. I mean, that's cheating. That's really cheating.
That is cheating. But well, listen, we have so much to talk about, but before we dig in, I want to just talk about you growing up. And this is funny to me because I know the very first time, here's what you said to me. You probably don't even remember what you said, but you said, I am a Texas girl through and through. And you said, I was born in Texas and I have every intention of dying in Texas.
Now that is the true statement. I am a Texas girl and I love Texas, and I you can get my dander up a little bit if you try to talk about Texas. Again, we are a huge state with multifaceted people living in it, and you know, I love to travel, but I love to come back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is a great state. And I think I had told you in one of our conversations that we had an office there 6 years, and I loved it. I could have been a Texas girl too, but I was born in Kentucky and now I live in St. Louis, and that's home. So now I know that you went, I want to kind of start getting into what you, yeah. What else did you grow up with siblings? Did you grow up with this big family, Marcel?
No. I had one sister who, we grew up in the country and outside the Metroplex, but truly there were 72 kids in my graduating high school class. So I grew up right down the road from my grandparents. My parents worked. They were working class people. We didn't have a lot of money. But we always had food, we always clothes, those kind of things. But I guess somewhere along the way, I just was a determined little thing, probably not your dream child, if you want to know the truth. My older sister, which really I miss to this day, she died in her early 30s. And that could be part of why I wanted a big family, because I only had the one sibling. And then when she was gone, there was just me.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, as I said, down the road from my grandfather. We had a big lake on the property, so I would fish with him. And when people know me now, they can't imagine a little girl who used to pluck earthworms out of the dirt and put them in my pockets. So then I could go,
fishing with grandpa.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good time, in the Metroplex. We were far enough away from Dallas. The name of the town is Rockwall.
Mm-hmm.
Far enough away, but close enough. My great grandparents had farmed there. My grandparents had farmed. In many ways, it was a very good time. My home life was fairly turbulent. My parents had a lot of, struggles, they might say dysfunctional. I would say, how do we define dysfunctional?
Aren't we all?
Yes, I'm a little worried mine might say that.
Right.
what do you do? But truly, I always wanted to go to college. I was the first college graduate. My parents nor my grandparents went to college. So it was something I really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, when you're a little girl who grows up outside and not a lot of money, I'm not sure what I was thinking. I was just thinking, truly, no matter what, I'm going to get this degree.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think honestly, Marcel, just in kind of the small amount of time that I spent with you, you had said you kind of get bored easily. You're a curious person. You've got a growth mindset, you know, and we're going to talk about that, but you're through and through, you're a learner and an explorer. And so I can definitely see why even then you thought, oh, I need to go get this degree. And, you know, so tell me about that. You went to Dallas Baptist University. I think you got a degree in nursing, right?
Yeah, at that time, in fact, I think they might just have brought it back. But at that time, they did have a nursing program. And so I went to college there. Actually was a cheerleader in college with my husband, who was not my husband then, who had always been a football player in high school. So it was hilarious that some friends just begged him to try out. But it was a blast. Small Christian college. I am a person of faith. It was a great time of growth, just from a personal level, from that faith-based perspective, to really know people who prayed. Now, my parents didn't pray over meals, but my grandparents did. But I didn't know anyone who prayed any other time. I mean, I thought, wow, that's a concept. So, you know, you can see maybe I was curious. Some things I just didn't ask about. I knew a lot of people who went to church, but I didn't know any people who talked about prayer.
Except right.
Except for the meal. Well, heaven only knows you got to pray with a meal, you might get indigestion. But, you know, Dallas Baptist was a great time. And then I got a degree in nursing. And really, in my mind's eye, I thought my husband was went to Dallas Theological Seminary. And I thought, well, when he finishes, then we'll have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll stay home. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, kind of in my mind's eye. And I always tell the story with my friends of faith that I felt like a good Christian mother just stayed home. And so there was truly a lot of changes, which we don't have a long enough podcast to tell that whole story, but there were a lot of changes happening within me. Mm-hmm. So he went on to DTS, and then we moved to Lubbock, Texas, because he really didn't want to do full-time ministry. And we moved to Lubbock, Texas, so he could get his PhD, which he took. He said, we'll be out there, Marcel, 3 to 4 years. And I don't know if you've ever been to West Texas, but the best people that walk the face of the earth, the best employees you'll ever have, live there. But that is the beginning and the end of the environment. It's got a lot of other good things. And so my Lubbock friends, don't blame me. As I said, the best people you'll ever see. But the wind blows and the dirt is in your ears and your eyes. And, you know, anyway, 11 years later, we moved from Lubbock. But I wanted to put that in because it was in Lubbock where I found home health, which would become my real calling, where I bought my first agency. So from a faith perspective, I believe God led me there, even though I didn't want to go. And I went to work, even though I didn't want to go to work. And I really found what God intended for Marcel Combs to do. I appreciate women who have the option to stay home, but that just wasn't God's path for me.
Right. Yeah, I love what you just said, because I know that was a struggle for you, because you had something in your mind that this is the way it was to go, right, Marcel? And it didn't quite go that way. But when you look back at your life, you can probably say God positioned you just where you needed to be and what you needed to do. I read something this morning and it said, get comfortable saying yes to God's yes. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is that he has, get comfortable with that. But, you know, I really, because you did buy your first healthcare agency in 1994. What was it like to go from a practitioner, a nurse, to now, you know, an entrepreneur? And, you know, you were an individual contributor and all of a sudden now you're leading this agency. What was that like, Marcel?
You know, I always say I have a lot more guts than I do brains. So that's probably what led to that. The truth is I had become the director. And the only reason I took a director of an agency is kind of like a manager of that unit. And I only took it because I had real struggles with the only other person because our boss was leaving, our manager was leaving. And I knew I was going to have to change jobs if the other person took it because I already knew. And the truth is 1-2 years later and we became friends and she continued to work for me. So understand I was 30 years old, 31 years old at the time I took the director job. And then about 9 years later, I would end up buying that same agency. So I took the director, didn't know what I was doing, didn't know any of that, and then fell in love with growth. And I had, you'll love this illustration. The owner of the agency was just my age, and he was a pharmacist. And he would come into my office, now again, another day, another time, and he would have cowboy boots, which I grew up in the Metroplex. No one I knew wore cowboy boots. And so he would put his boots up on my desk and sit and talk to me. And I would think, who are you? We are still friends today. He's my biggest mentor in business. But he would tell me things like, you know, another little town, Marcel, in Plainview, the office can only be so big, but in Lubbock, it can be as big as you want. Well, I didn't know any better, so I just kind of believed him. And he would tell me things like, the most important thing is to bill and collect. If you don't bill and collect, then you're out of business. But truly, I for him, started 3 more offices. I just said, hey, we can grow this thing. And then due to circumstances in his own life, he said, I want to sell this. And truly, I can't tell you the next part without telling you this part. But he backed the loan for me to
buy the business,
to buy the credit to run this Medicare home health. And then he also let me pay him out for the dollar amount. So if it hadn't been for him, one, his business knowledge, and two, his ability to believe in me. Why he did it, I don't know if you met him today, if he would tell you why he took that chance. But he took that chance on me. And then truly, I think he had a vested interest in my success. So for me, you know, to then own the agency, you go to bed, and we had, you know, we were young and dumb and didn't come from families who had money. And we, you know, had what a lot of young and dumb people, credit card debt and that kind of stuff. And we had spent years getting out of debt. And so all of a sudden, I go to bed one night and I, except for my house, completely out of debt. And I wake up the next morning and I have a $1 million loan and I have a $1 million line of credit.
Scary fear.
And then, you know, we proceed to move back to the Metroplex. And so I just remember walking outside my house and we had spent $200,000 on a house, which I know everyone would think that's cheap these days. But it was a huge stretch. So I have a big house loan, a big loan. And my husband is finishing up his PhD. And I'm kind of the primary breadwinner. And I looked around and thought, this is insanity.
Not anything like you would have ever dreamed, Marcel.
Well, you know, really, I think there was part of me that thought, once the kids are in school, maybe I'll have my own business. But this is what I say. From a pure faith perspective, God's dreams for us are so much bigger than our dream. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing I have to say here about this mentor friend of mine who continues to this day to be, now we're both old, but a friend of mine, when he said to me, what's your financial goal? And remember, I'm making, I think, $25,000 a year. It's late 80s, you know, early 90s. I mean, I might have been up to like 35, 40,000 by then. And I said, I would like to have in the bank $6 million without, you know, without any debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to be, you know, to be being paid really well. And you know what he said to me? Not what my friends would have said to me is, you are out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's not near enough, Marcel. And I thought, wow, if he's saying that's not near enough, that must mean that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to have mentors that believe more of you than you believe of yourself.
Could not agree more. Right. And I've talked to so many successful people, and I know that you have too. That is a common thread. There was someone in their life that spoke into them something that they did not even see in themselves. It's a common thread. I love that. Well, I want to just say one more thing, and then we do need to take a quick break. But you, that business that you purchased, I think you grew that, Marcel. I think this is correct. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had about 1,200 employees in multiple locations, multiple states. Just incredible.
I took that business, I sold that business, formed a management company, managed all the home health services for a large hospital system. Then I ended that, and then I started the last business.
Was that FMS?
We were about 70 million when we sold in revenue. So we went, I mean, I started over, I, as I said, I don't always have good sense. I started over three or four times. And let me add something too. I didn't do that. It was always me in the bank. So I was just a breath away that I, you know, I'm responsible. It was a service organization. I'm mm-hmm. responsible for all these people. And I also was, you know, I have all these children.
Right.
I like to go to college and do all those things. So truly I had a CFO who said to me, Marcel, I can predict everything as far as cash flow, except for the prayer part. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you're at the brink and you think, oh gosh, the government just decides to upgrade their software system. And so they shut down for 2 weeks over the holidays. Well, guess what? When do your employees want to get paid? In the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So we would pray our way to having enough money to make payroll. And I think our payroll was about 1.2, 1.3 every 2 weeks when I sold.
That's
so
incredible.
Deal.
Yeah. Well, we've got so much more to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Marcel Combs.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Marcel Combs. So, Marcel, I have a lot of questions for you about leadership. And, you know, what do you think your leadership style is? And do you think you've seen it evolve over the years?
Well, I hope, you know, my goal is that my last breath on this earth, that I would have learned something that day. I hope that I can always, no matter how old I get, that I can learn. And so it has been one of the things that I've tried to push myself in, to be able to say, what groups can I sit in? What arenas can I be in where I am uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. You know, especially, I've done a lot of things. You know, I failed a lot of times too. Thankfully, never anything horrific, but a lot of individual fails. And, you know, to just say enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired, and I am just gonna pick flowers with my grandchildren, mm-hmm. and feed the donkeys
right
in the morning. But something within me, and I believe that is a God thing, says you have to push yourself, Marcel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think my leadership style is, and I actually have a book coming out either the end of this year or the first of next year, on a particular kind of friendship management, if you will. So I try to be a true friend to my employees, but also lead them.
Mm-hmm.
And to be a leader, you have to make hard decisions. You have to make controversial decisions. And you have to be willing. I think humility is a strength and not a weakness. But I think you have to be a strong person to be able to lead others and to survive in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask me that, some of my deepest friendships are people that I've worked with along the way. And they are, there are times that they've been unhappy with me and vice versa. And I have had to fire people.
Sure.
Philosophy is I try not to hire anyone I don't like. And so if I don't like them, then I don't hire them. And then my bar is I have to find some piece of them to love. Mm. And because if you can love some portion of a person, you can help them grow and forgive a lot of other things. And I will say I've never found anyone. I have found people. It was harder to find something to love.
But if you search hard enough and long enough,
you can find it. And really, I have had the wonderful, I used to always tell everyone, you know, I love, the best thing is rainbow sherbet. I know people won't need it these days because it's not healthy. But, you know, I love all the colors. All the colors and personalities make a better organization. And so if I have to give a short answer, it comes down to kind of those things. You know, if you love people and you look for the right people, you don't have to worry about the laws because your standards will be above the laws.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, that's good. Well, okay. So you've kind of already touched on this a little bit, but the buzzword we hear all the time, except with the exception of Gen AI, that's just about every meeting I'm in, it's what about Gen AI, generative AI? Is culture and how important culture is. So, you know, what kind of culture did you strive to build with the agency?
And I think, you know, we broke it down into, I was always in a people business, but I think all business is people business. Mm-hmm. Is that we had a culture where you could grow. It was a safe environment, safe emotionally, psychologically, physically, that you could take a risk and yet it would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That we were customer obsessed, that when we were in the public, everything was great. We were great. Everything was great. When we got back to our home court, then we could complain or whatever.
Break it down and talk about what went right and what could be improved on, right? So you always did that retrospective.
We provided a lot of support, but if we lost a customer or didn't get a deal, we talked about, what did we do wrong? What could we have done different? Even if we did all the things right,
mm-hmm.
what ingredients could have made this work? And the answer, even for myself, was never, you know, that there was nothing. We had to have, even today, we have to say, what could we do different so the outcome would have been different next time?
Mm.
Where can we achieve? And so I think the culture would be one that loved, enjoyed the people we worked with.
Mm-hmm.
It was never acceptable to just get along with our coworkers. We called people to a higher calling than that. We said it was patients first. We're walking in a home. We're taking care of a real live person with a family in a situation they don't really want to be in. I just experienced that because my husband had a total knee, which he's going to love me giving his PHI right here on a big podcast. but, you know, for the first time with my husband, had I experienced home health, and not only home health, but home health where I didn't own the agency.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily I knew the therapist. So we requested the therapist. So it's been a great time. But, you know, simple things like letting the family know before you're coming, how am I obsessed with doing the right thing? Not because in our world, the regulations say it, not because the law says it, but because it's the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't always have good news for my employees, but I tried to give them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we couldn't do raises or we couldn't do certain things, I would go to them with the truth. This is what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, I should knock on wood. I was never sued by an employee. Most employees would say they miss our culture. And so if you, or they learned something that took it to their next place. I mm-hmm. love new college grads because they bring, you know, they bring an energy. Yes, they're a whole lot of trouble. But they bring new energy and they're so
new ideas and fresh. Excitement and enthusiasm and passion. Yeah. And yeah, I do too.
That so internet, I don't know if that answers your question or not, Lisa.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing culture that you built there. And it's so important. It's a culture that's really focused. It's people-centric.
Uh-huh.
People-centric. And you have to be obsessed with your customer. In your case, it was patients, right?
And we talk a lot about, we are talked a lot about internal and external customers.
Mm-hmm.
So our mm-hmm. internal customers were our employees. And we used to do a lot of fun things called surprise and delight. So we would try to do some celebration they weren't expecting. It doesn't always cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's 100 degrees in Texas. So we would try to bring in ice cream bars. So if nurses came in and you wanted an ice cream bar, and of course for the diet conscious, we would try to have
gelato or something.
Yeah, you would have to have keto or,
right,
you know,
right,
whatever it is, homegrown avocado on a stick. But, you know.
But always rainbow sherbet.
But always. That's right.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Well, Marcel, I mean, I started this whole thing by saying all the things that you do, and I'm just like, woof, you know, I mean, it's, you do a lot. You do a lot. So in 2007, as if you weren't busy enough, you founded a nonprofit called 2612. I want to know, first of all, what's the mission of 2612? And then where does that name come from?
Well, it comes from Isaiah. It was formed, you know, it's funny. You wake up and you have an idea and you think the idea is going to do one thing. And then when the other thing comes about, we begged our law firm, which is a wonderful law firm. I'll say their name here, Haynes and Boone. And then we begged them to do the nonprofit articles of corporation for free. Because that was a nonprofit, right?
Right.
I hope my friends, I'm going to send this to a couple of friends from there. You know, we set it up really thinking that the nonprofit would be a place where our employees would have an opportunity to give back. So yes, we took donations and really none of the administrative overhead. All of that came from my corporations. Mm-hmm. So we covered all the operations through profits of our company. And then any of the work we did, employees could give. We also allowed them, we always had a second choice of United Way or someone mm-hmm. that they could give to, because we wanted to, you know, never be accused that we could not offer both for our employees, because we didn't want it to be, you know, an arm twisting kind of thing, and really never was. So all of those funds we did, and we also did matching. So if an employee took off 3 days to do a trip with them, we would match that with 3 days. We felt like, and the employee did have to pay for some portions, because I really felt like, and Becky Hines, who helped found that, felt like the employee needs to have some skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be that we are hosting all of that. So we did things. We always partnered with another ministry. So we went to Haiti with Mission Discovery. We went to Belize, which is around about how I ended up. We helped hospice in Belize. Really, we helped them take their standards to the Ministry of Health. And as far as I know, they're still enacted today.
Good.
I went about 9 different years to them. So an employee, we did emergency type situations with Samaritan Purse. That's not my favorite, by the way. I had no skills. And so they gave me a wheelbarrow. Well, if a girl is not used to rolling the wheelbarrow in and out, like with the Hurricane Ike and that kind of stuff, at the end of the day, you can no longer move your arms. I mean, yes. And so they would not give me anything else except the wheelbarrow.
Except for wheelbarrow duty. Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, we did all kinds. We went to Bulembu, we in Africa. But again, always with another ministry so that we didn't bear, you know, all the
logistics, and, you know, they already knew what they were doing. We've done the same thing, Marcel. We've done several mission trips, but it's always been with a ministry that knows what they're doing, and it's wonderful. So you yourself, you've done about 30 different mission trips, I think, worldwide. But, you know, I'm telling our listeners, if they have not done that, how do those mission trips really inform how you live life forward for you? I mean, I've got my own ideas around what it did for our family, but I'd love to hear for you how that maybe changed even the way you thought about things.
Well, you know, let me tell you the shallow part first so that people can, if they're sitting out there, I always felt like some were called to give and some were called to go. Marcel was called to give because Marcel is a creature comfort girl. And so all the pictures I had seen did... You know, there were no creature comforts involved in that. Let me give you my heart. We had a pharmacist at that time, or once upon a time, that was working for us, and she was going to teach just elemental pain control for the hospital in Belize, and then their they call it palliative care, but they're hospice palliative care there. And she got typhus, our pharmacist, and couldn't go. And truly, I was the only one. And when it first happened, Becky Hines, who was headed 2612, a great woman of prayer, she began to pray that Marcel would feel compelled to go. So 6 weeks before they're going to go, I say to her, wrong thing to say if you don't want to go, you know, I just felt this voice to go. And I would have to do a lot of work, a lot of education, I mean, on myself to be able to do this because, you know, just a lot, but because of the audience we were teaching, I was going to be considered the expert. And so anyway, I ended up going, and what happened was we got in the car with a little Dr. Beatrice Thompson, and she was a volunteer doctor in the country of Belize, a tiny country, only South American, if I have this right. So, you know, if your callers say that's not right, they can call in and say this. The only English-speaking South American country. So I could speak the language. She put us in the car with her, and we drove to see patients. So there's no reimbursement. I mean, I'm coming from, we're mad because Medicare insurance companies aren't paying enough. We don't have, you know, blah, blah, blah. Our employees are all complaining. These are all volunteers, and they were physician-led teams because the physician was the only one who had a car and had the money to buy gas. You know, fast forward, I fell in love. And I didn't enjoy the parts that I knew I was going to enjoy. Not my whole family, but most of my family went 1 year as we did education for their group. We bring in educators, all of that. I've never been so hot in my life. In a rainforest, in a conference room. It was a real conference room without AC. And, you know, we all went and all did that together. It brings you to task. You know, we think we live in a society where we never have enough. We just don't have enough. We don't have enough. We don't have enough. And once you go there, and you see people with so little giving so much that it is heart-stopping. I mean, truly, it's heart-stopping. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say I am not one of those people who said, I'm dying to go on a mission trip. I can't wait to go. I really, I would love to send you, Lisa. And truly, even after I loved the people and I loved to go see them, I did not, from a creature comfort perspective, want to go. Mm-hmm. Even though I ended up finding a place that did have AC. And so since I was paying all administrative overhead, let's just say that's where we stayed.
That's where you stayed.
anyway.
That's so funny. Well, let me ask you about this, because in 2015, you founded the W Conference, which is aimed at empowering women in the workplace. What really inspired you, Marcel, to create this conference, and what do you hope that, what are the impacts that you're hoping for from this conference that you founded?
Do you know what? I love the W Conference, and really it was from a heart perspective that I, especially for women of faith who are working full-time, which really the statistics these days are, let's get with it, conservative Christian churches, women are working. And I never felt supported. One was, oh, you work? Well, yeah, there's four boys and they all need to be fed. But I didn't say that, obviously, because I felt bad about it. And then the next statement was, oh, you travel? Like you leave your children?
Who takes care of your children while you're gone? Yeah.
And so I felt like that, I mean, just an overwhelming burden that we needed to bring a group together to say, you are supported. Here's how you do it. Here's how I did it. Here's women speaking. And remember, we didn't have a lot of money to pay speakers. So I had to get almost famous, not famous. And many of them have become fairly famous. So people like Allie Worthington and Ellie Holcomb and, you know, people who've gone on to really, so I caught them right. I remember when
in the
I
beginning.
Yeah. I gotta get them almost famous. Anyway, so really that was our number one goal, is how do we support women in the workplace that, you know, are trying to do this thing and trying to do a good job. That one of my sons gave me the greatest compliments a few years back. And he said, Mom, no, you weren't there for every practice and everything, but you were there for the important things. I remember flying to Dallas from a conference, getting in my car, changing clothes in the car. Don't do that in the Dallas traffic. Don't do that. But I did, running to the football game, walking my son for senior night onto the field, getting back in the car, driving back to the airport, going back to my destination. Because it was so important for me that my kids know that I was there for them. That was really, that has to stay. If you're working, I gave up TV. I didn't watch TV for 100 years. And I'm not saying what you have to cut out. I didn't volunteer at church anymore. I did my kids and I did my work.
Right.
My work became my ministry because, you cannot do everything. Or I would not.
Really and truly, Marcel, I love what you just said. That's the greatest advice I always say, no matter what kind of cape you think you're wearing, you can't do everything and you've got to say no. And, you know, I mean, same thing with me. I mean, now we've been fortunate because we've been able to hire help at various times.
Right.
But I always say I never outsourced going and buying a prom dress with my girls.
Right.
That was what I wanted to do with them, right? But do I need to be the one to pick up the cleaning every time? No. I mean, the cleaning needs to be picked up. The what? Yeah. What did you just say?
Or clean the toilets. I'm sorry. Or
clean the toilets. Exactly. No. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've had the same helper at our home since our kids were babies. You know, she's in her 80s now. But but you would never know it. I mean, she's got a lot of energy, this woman. But there are choices. And so, like, for me, I know, I don't know about you, I don't have a lot of hobbies. I'm not saying there's a wrong, you've got to take time for yourself, right? But I don't like go and play tennis with girlfriends or anything like that. I mean, there are choices. So when you say yes to one thing, you're saying, when you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else. And you just have to figure out what your non-negotiables are.
And absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can't be more right. You know, Ivy is much younger than the boys, and Craig went to Iraq when she was in middle school. Our youngest son had gone to college, and I hired a nanny for her. And really, after she grew up and went to college, I kept the nanny for me because I said, you know, I still need a nanny. In fact, she still works for me. I've been out of college for a long time. So.
Right. That's funny. Well, I'm going to talk about one more thing and then we'll talk about something extra. I found this really inspiring. Our CCXO, our Chief Client Experience Officer, is Dan Roberts, and he says it all the time that growth never happens in the land of comfort. So you, in your 50s, Marcel, but you're really like 29. You look like you're 29.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, just don't ask my children's age.
When you were in your 50s, you kind of decided to go put yourself in a semi-uncomfortable position because you wanted to grow. And I found this so inspiring. You actually went back in your 50s to get your master's degree.
Yes. And I talked 6 of my executives into going too.
Yes, that is so wonderful. I just love that. You know, you did your master's in organizational leadership. What did you take from that? And, you know, what was the precipice for that particular degree?
Do you know what? The truth is, I always, from the plan in my head, you know, the one that didn't quite work out, was that Craig's last year of seminary, I was going to go back and get my master's because I was going to get it in nursing. Mm-hmm. I was going to be what I was going to do. If you asked me then, I was never going to sit behind a desk all day. I was always going to be with the patient, blah, blah, blah. You know, what can I say? so it was a life goal. But fast forward after all these years, I always felt like I wanted to get my master's degree. By this time, I thought, well, I'm just going to get my MBA. And so I'm not a onesie, I'm a twosie. And so I always think if you're going to do something, do it with a group of people to have fun with.
Mm-hmm.
And so truly we checked out MBA programs all, remember what year this was? I mean, this was 2011. So online programs were not the standard. They were not the standard. It was really hard. Anyway, through a series of events, we found a gal. Her name is Dr. Kathy Crockett. She was leading this program, actually, which all roads lead to Lubbock. We would tell you that in our company. And she was leading a master's in leadership program. Had one phone call with her. We were sold. We got to go with that group to China to speak through an interpreter. I didn't want to go to China either. I had told her when we started the program, I would like an overseas experience, but I would like it to be in Italy or Greece. Or she calls up and says, how about China? I was like, did I say China? No.
I said Italy.
You know what? Women are in leadership are the same worldwide. And even through an interpreter. We cried with some women. Their leadership job is so hard. We then went to Italy in a later date. I'm on the foundation board for Lubbock Christian University still. because, you know, I'm not Church of Christ, so I'm on the foundation board. Right. I said, y'all know I'm not Church of Christ, right? I spoke for their commencement. So I will say that was just one. It was a life goal for me. It would not, it really didn't make any from a financial perspective.
Right. I think you'd already been doing the job, Marcel. Oh, yeah. But, you know, I just love it. I mean, it just shows me that you are going to continue. And so, I mean, there's so much more we could talk about. You've been inducted into the Hall of Fame. You, like, have a book coming out. There's so much more we could be talking about. But I know whatever you do, Marcel, you're going to continue to grow. You're going to continue to make a difference. And I'm going to go back to something you said at the very beginning that I just love. And you said the last day that you learn something is going, your prayer that it's the day that you die, you know? And I absolutely love that. I had the privilege last year of having Kim Blanchard on the Sunday Extra podcast. And at the time he was maybe 83, 84, something like that. And he said, you know, Lisa, he goes, so many people, I've seen 30-year-olds that say, oh, the best is behind me. He goes, the best is in front of me. I'm going to live with gusto for the rest of my life. And I've never forgotten that, Marcel. And I want to be that too. And I know you do too. So, but let me ask you this. This is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Do you know, I thought about this. And I listened to some of your interviews. I would say it, and I kind of said it at the beginning. I think it's love. And I think it's loving what you do. Loving the passion. Loving the new thing. Loving the challenge. Loving your people that you get to work with or meet or develop. Sure, they irritate you, but put forth love, that's all the extra you need.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does the scripture say? Love covers a multitude of sin. I mean, love trumps everything, right? It really does. And I'm with you on that one. I do believe. In fact, in 2021, my word, which I had two words, but then I had a good friend that's a marketing branding guy, and he goes, it's okay, Lisa, just put a hyphen in there. So my word for 2021 was love more. And what I meant by that is love your people more, love your family more, love what you do more. How do you love whatever the challenge? Uh-huh. It's kind of funny to say you love a challenge, but really loving to learn how to solve problems and challenges. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. So I'm right with you on that one, Marcel. But thank you so much for being on the show today. It has just been such a pleasure to spend this time with you. And I know that your journey and all the insights that you share are going to help our listeners. So thank you for that.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. And this year is to love the moment I'm in. And this is moments that I have enjoyed immensely.
Me too. Take care, my friend.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.